You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome again to Because Miami. Billy Corbin here. As always, we've got a couple of guests today. Weather icon, South Florida icon, Brian Norcross is going to join us here during hurricane season. And the co-founder of Miami New Drama finds himself and his theater and a Pulitzer Prize winning artist all in the crosshairs of people who want to take away freedom. So we will get to Michelle Houseman in a second as well. But let us begin with, how do we say this in Spanish? Azúcar Papi, John Ruiz of the University of Miami. He is saying Tropical Park Stadium.
Wait, of the University of Miami?
Well, like he is the sugar daddy of the University of Miami, and he's saying stadium at Tropical Park and now hotels at Tropical Park as well. I thought the first one was lunacy enough. Why is he talking about stadiums for the University of Miami, and why is anyone believing that this is any kind of possibility?
It doesn't strike me as someone who is told no very often, and this has been a panacea for a lot of Southwest Dade Miami Hurricanes fans that just think, man, if they moved to Tropical Park, then everything would be great. If they had their own place, everything would be great. It can galvanize in a community that's near them. Everything would be great, and we could recapture the glory years. I remember back when there was debate about whether or not they moved to Hard Rock Stadium, when they first moved to Hard Rock Stadium, and the stadium was a bit more soulless than it is now. When I was in college, I remember a ton of Tropical Park conversation. And so this is something that fans of this program really believe in for some reason.
Okay. I mean, I just have two things to say about it, both of which I've said before. The first is there will not be a Miami Hurricanes football stadium at Tropical Park. And there's a million reasons why.
What's chief among them?
UM doesn't want it.
What's second?
UM doesn't want it. Those are the top three reasons.
Is there like a government reason? Okay. Do you think the Miami-Dade County government wouldn't want this?
I think the Miami-Dade County government is for sale. So I think that if the price is right, it would not be impossible to put this on a ballot referendum and to perhaps buy it. I think the problem, though, is that you have organized, moneyed neighbors to the park who want nothing whatsoever to do with this. So whereas you didn't have that with Mel Reese, you didn't have a neighborhood, a community that anybody listens to.
It's because by they don't the have airport enough, and it's a broke community around a golf course. This is not that.
This is not that. And I think the neighbors would put the kibosh on any potential referendum. But that doesn't mean that the conversation wouldn't advance, to your point, in the Miami-Dade County Commission. The problem is UM doesn't want that fight. UM doesn't want that battle. UM doesn't want David Sampson and I making mini documentaries about this land grab. They don't want the political fallout. Win or lose, they don't want to be a part of that. They don't want to be showing up to county commission meetings going, yeah, give us this park. It's a bad look. And more importantly, that's not even the primary reason. They like Hard Rock. Hard Rock is a good venue now. It was not before.
It's a world-class venue.
It's fabulous.
Now.
And they're very happy there. They have 10 or 11 years left on this lease. They'd like to be there for longer. They do not need a venue for 6 or 7 days out of the year. The athletic director has made it explicit that his concern is the other 358 days out of the year that these student-athletes are on campus to train, be educated, and Mario Cristobal is focusing his energy on fundraising for better on-campus facilities. The second thing I've said time and time again is, boy, I'll say don't let them fool you, but you let them fool you every single time. I don't care if they say it's about green space or parks or affordable housing.
It's about the hotels.
Or it's about a sports day or a soccer is love and everybody loves Hurricanes football. That is a shiny object. It is a distraction. It is always a real estate hustle. It is always a land grab. And your sugar daddy finally admitted it this week when he tweeted, there will be not one, but two hotels in Tropical Park. You're going to pave paradise, build a shopping mall, build a tech hub, bro, build a... It's ridiculous. It's, I mean, these public-private partnerships always profit the private billionaire or millionaire developer or sports team owner behind it. It is never about public benefits, ever.
Been reading about this locally. It's a national story now as well. The New York Times and others have noticed that there is danger when you start screwing with art and banning people because of ethnicity or sexual orientation. So the co-founder of Miami New Drama, Michelle Hausman, is with us. We thank you for your time, Michelle. Billy, give the people the background here on what the Miami-Dade School Board has done, not recognizing LGBTQ History Month in October and banning the work of Nilo Cruz.
Yeah, well, in years past, the school board has acknowledged National LGBTQ History Month. They, in a ridiculous and inane school board meeting last week, they were shouted down by the most extremist voices in the community. They didn't even listen to their own student ambassador who sits right up there on the dais with the school board members. She was shouted down by some of the extremists in the crowd. This included Proud Boys and various other, I should say, minority of the community that are really dictating now theological policy here and not educational policy here. And so Nilo Cruz fled Cuba with his family during a freedom flight in 1970. They settled in Little Havana. He graduated, went to elementary school, middle school, Miami Senior High School. He became the first Hispanic to ever win the Pulitzer Prize for drama for his play Anna in the Tropics, which world premiered in South Florida, is celebrating it, went moved on to Broadway, is celebrating its 20th anniversary at Miami New Drama with a production in the new year. And Nilo Cruz was inducted in 2017 into the Miami-Dade County Public Schools Student Hall of Fame. And now the Miami-Dade County Public School System has banned high school students from attending this play. This play, Anna in the Tropics, is like the Cuban-American Our Town. It's a classic. And it's not a very controversial work either.
Well, let's bring in the co-founder of Miami New Drama. And thank you, Michelle, for joining us. But it feels familiar to you, right? History is replete with this sort of stuff happening, whether it's burning books or banning artists.
Well, I mean, Nilo Cruz comes from Cuba. Michelle Hausman comes from Venezuela. I mean, he was quoted in the Miami Herald as saying this is all deja vu to him.
Michelle, thank you for joining us. Sorry for the circumstances. What can you tell us about how you're feeling about all this?
Listen, this is very personal to me. I feel extremely saddened by it because, you know, for many years, we had successfully brought in thousands of students to come see the work we do. Before every show, I would go in with a microphone and I would ask them, who of you have never seen a professional play before? More than half of them raise their hands. When they come to our theater, it's the first time that they encounter world-class theater, the first time they encounter professional production. And you could see in their reaction, we actually have pages and pages of feedback from teachers thanking them, because in reality, that same policy that now is affecting the content affected the budget. So now schools don't have budgets for the arts. So it is on us, on the nonprofits, to do the work that school is supposed to be doing. And now school is not even allowing us. First, they took the budget away from the students, and now they're not allowing the institutions to share the work with the students. Nilo Cruz found Shakespeare while he was in Miami Senior High. He saw a production of Shakespeare. It changed his life. Billy's co-writer in Cocaine Cowboy, the great Orrin Squires, now a big shot TV writer, was a graduate of Miami Public School System. He saw a show when he was in junior year and it changed his life. He saw a show that the school brought him to see. So how many Orrin Squires, how many Nilo Cruz are we aborting by banning students from attending theater?
This is the thing that's so important, is that theater is inaccessible to people. It is economically inaccessible. It is geographically inaccessible. And so during school, this gives kids an opportunity to be exposed to this culture. Incidentally, this was for high school students, this opportunity. Right. Parents can opt out, as you can any field trip, obviously. You know, everybody needs that permission slip signed. But this play has been accessible to Miami-Dade County Public School students in the past, since 2003. And now, no more. Now, students are banned from seeing it as a school field trip. At first, they gave you no reason for it, but what is the reason they're giving you now?
They're still not giving me any reasons. All I've heard is from journalists that they gave reasons to them. Mm. And the reason is the sexually explicit nature of the work.
I'm sorry, what?
It is unbelievable that that's the excuse they're saying.
The play takes place in like 1930 Tampa in like a cigar factory, right? Like, it would be more controversial if they talked about putting salami in a Cuban sandwich, I think, because Tampa.
You but better like, watch yourself.
I know.
You fascist.
This is pretty controversial.
You proud boy. Be careful. Like, back off.
Fabiola Santiago, who, by the way, we would not be here if not for Fabiola Santiago, who is a columnist, an opinion, you know, writer at the Miami Herald, but who broke this news, which has become an international scandal since she wrote an extensive article about this. She said that there's nothing more explicit in this show than there would be on a telenovela that an abuela would be watching in front of children.
I mean, have you not seen Spanish language television these days? They're still trotting out the 23-year-old in a bikini with the 70-year-old lecherous
what,
guy.
What decade is it?
Still happening all over Spanish television. No one told Spanish television that the rules have changed.
There's more sexual explicit innuendo in the billboards of insurance companies for Spanish language market.
But again, this is for high school students. Also, nobody's suggesting that elementary school students should come and see this regardless. This is a field trip for high school students. And what they've claimed is they have claimed that the play is not age appropriate. And by the way, this all ties back into the Florida HB 1557, the so-called don't say gay bill, the quote unquote parental rights bill, which was supposed to only impact grades kindergarten through third, but is now infiltrated and censored the arts
censorship.
It's cabaret. It is Germany in 1933-34. They come for they have to censor the artists. They have to censor the creatives, which, by the way, disproportionately, a lot of creative people come from the LGBTQIA communities. And so they have to suppress, they have to deny their existence. They have to try to erase them from history and from existence and censor their work. This is some department, this is the Miami-Dade County Public Schools Division of Academics. Someone sent me a better term for that, which is El Departamento Ideológico del Partido Comunista de Cuba, which is the Department of Ideology of the Communist Party of Cuba and the regime entity, the Politburo, that was responsible for censoring and banning works of art, media communications, and undesirable individuals. LGBTQIA community has been branded undesirable individuals, and they've come for art that is too provocative because this is from a Cuban-American artist. This is about the Cuban-American immigrant and exile experience, and he happens to be a gay artist. And this is not a play about gender identity or homosexuality or anything. Is there even a gay character in the show?
You know, I actually disagree with you because this is a play that is all about grooming. Can you imagine an innocent homosexual student who is forced to see a man and a woman together?
Oh.
They're grooming into heterosexuality.
Oh, escándalo.
Michelle, did you think this could happen in America?
No, Dan, it's insane. When I left Venezuela, I thought that all this was behind. But I know, like, when this happened, deja vu. More than a decade ago, I was doing a production of Hitler on the Roof. During that time, Gaza and Israel went into war, and Chavez expelled the Israeli ambassador and the orchestra that was working with us. There was, you know, 98% subsidized by the government, pulled out because they didn't want to be part of a Jewish show. Now, the government of Chavez, nobody called them and tell them you can't participate in that show. Out of fear, out of not offending the powers that be, they decided to, you know, censor me. In the same way it's happening now. I don't know, you know, that somebody called the Department of Academics and said, don't do this. I think that they are covering their own tuchus. You know, they don't have a problem taking away the rights of students to great art as long as it doesn't put their jobs at risk. It's the same play. It's fear. And that's what's happening.
For those who don't speak Spanish, tuchus means ass.
I have never heard tuchus said with a Hispanic accent before. That is a first. Your accent is soaked in like all over Miami, that accent exists where I hear it in your pauses and everything else, but never with a tuchus.
I have to ask you, Michelle, how does Nilo feel about this? I mean, is this frightening?
Hurt. Nilo is profoundly hurt. Nilo is a product of the Miami-Dade County Public School System. Nilo is, he was inducted into the Hall of Fame of the Miami Public School System. And he feels that partly it's because he's a gay man, he's a gay artist. He really feels that that is part of it. He actually shared with me an experience that happened to him some years ago when his sister, Clara, was a teacher at the school system, and there was a picture of when he got the Pulitzer Prize or something, one of his greatest accolades. They put it in the board on the teacher lounge. And the next day, a teacher had written the word gay on top of him. For him, was very hurtful at the time. And, you know, this is yet again another moment where the public school system makes him feel like he's a second-class citizen, where the rest of America views him as one of our golden child.
You say hurt. What about scared?
Well, yes. I mean, I think, there are stages of grief. I think now he's in the shock and hurt. I think we should all... I think as an artist, he's scared about the future of the country. We've spoken about that, at length. And I think that everybody who has kids in the public school system should be extremely afraid of what their education is going to be. If this is what's happening now, what's going to happen in 5 years? The board that has not yet been sworn in is not a better board than we had before. So it's not like things are going to improve.
So, Michelle, I want to say, and I don't know this doesn't change much, but I would like to personally pay for any Miami-Dade County Public School student with an ID who comes to see the show in January and February of 2023. I guess the challenge there becomes, how do we get them, transportation-wise, to the theater in Miami Beach? What about their parents who may have to bring them? Can we pay for their tickets as well? What's next here, I guess, is the question. Because the school board cannot prevent the students from, or their parents on their own, from attending the play. So how do we encourage... By the way, at the risk of me being accused of being a heterosexual groomer...
No, that's not what you're going to be accused of. You could have paid for this without telling everybody you were offering to pay for it. You could have done that exchange privately with Michelle without making a big announcement about it.
Listen, we're always happy to have the students for free. Billy, you don't need to pay. You can always donate to Miami New Drama, as you always do. Or you can continue to write plays for us, as you've done in the past.
Look at that. He turned my money down. You see, he turned my money down.
Well, no, he
reacted. He's not good here.
What are you, Gilbert Gottfried?
He reallocated it, is what he did.
He reallocated it.
You can make a donation still more quietly, more anonymously.
Bill, you mentioned the barriers. Like, that's a problem. If I open it for free for any, which I'm happy to do, the students that are going to come are those whose parents can drive them or who have cars and who have money to park. When we offer the students tickets, which, by the way, we're talking about thousands, we partner particularly with the schools that we know the students have less interaction with theater in their lives. So that is what's really, really, like, I'm angry about this. The irony is that Anna in the Tropic is a play about the power of literature. It's about a group of people who suddenly come across Anna Karenina and their life changes forever, right? So I believe that that is actually, right, the power of literature, the power of art. And the county probably feels the same way, because otherwise they wouldn't be banning or preventing the students from coming to see a great work of art.
And they get exposed to this literature in the most historically fascinating way through this Lecter character. That's not a thing that we know of anymore. It's just in this cigar factory. We just explain it a little bit more, Michelle, what the play is about. It's fabulous.
The play takes place in Ybor City in Tampa in 1929. It's a factory that folds cigars.
Cigar rollers.
And they're all related. It's a family. And, to pass the time, they would hire a lector to read to them while they work. And the lector reads to them Anna Karenina. The story of Anna Karenina starts to interject in the life of them, and passions get revealed and drama happens. Oh, by the way, here's a funny thing. There's a murder that takes place on stage.
The funny murder.
Nobody has said anything about a murder.
Oh, the violence isn't an issue, you're saying?
No problem. It's a funny murder. It's funny. It's a funny murder.
There's no issue about the government. Like, isn't that insane? They're all about the same. We don't have a sexual problem in school. We have a gun violence problem in school. If they would have told us about violence, you know what? Maybe that's a
good reason to ban it, because that's a better thing. That's a better explanation to give the journalists. We don't like the violence in it.
Yeah, even funnier.
They've not mentioned. It's insane.
You've heard the turn of phrase, representation matters. It's important for people to see. I mean, we're dealing with this controversy now with the Little Mermaid, because apparently mermaids can't be black. Mythical creatures can't be anything but Anglo-Saxon.
Dragons
can't be ridden by people of color. But it's not only seeing stories about characters that you recognize yourself in, but it's also about the artists and the people behind them. And for Miami-Dade County Public Schools to come and see a work of art that was created by a Miami-Dade County Public School alum who attended elementary, middle, and high school and graduated, who went on to become the first Hispanic to win a Pulitzer Prize for drama, that means something. Not only are they seeing a story of Cuban Americans and the history of Cuban Americans in Florida, but seeing art created by someone who looks like them, who is educated in the same places that they're being educated, and who can make them aware of the possibilities for their own future. And this is where I think it comes into play. Artists are weird. Artists are, as Nilo said in Fabiola's column, by their nature, outsiders. They are unique and they are complicated, and many times they are confused and looking for outlets and looking for answers, and they find it in art, and they find it in literature and theater, and a lot of kids who might be otherwise lost can find a home and can find safety and protection in art. Terrell McCraney, the Oscar-winning screenwriter of Moonlight, who graduated New World School of the Arts shortly after me, he told me that New World School of the Arts saved his life, that he would be dead if not for that school and that exposure to that environment, those teachers, and art.
I'll tell you something about Terrell McCraney, who's another superhero of our community. There was a play produced of him, I think Gable Stages produced maybe 6 years ago, of Choir Boy. The county rented the Lyric Theater and performed it for students for about a week or so. That play is an extraordinary play. It would never have seen the light of day with today's environment, you know, because there are homosexual content. It would never, like, this happened in 5 years. This community is turning to the right at a very concerning speed.
Michelle, my last question is to this point, to this anecdote about Terrell's work and now the censorship of Nilo Cruz. This is not the first time this has happened to you in the last year or so with the Miami-Dade County Public Schools. They are now starting to, this Politburo here is now starting to censor more and more art and artists. Is that true?
It's actually the fourth time it has happened. It's the first time that we decided to go public because we were afraid of repercussion. We have residencies in the public school system. We teach theater to two public schools. We do a tour. We create a play and we do a tour. We didn't want to compromise that. And so we waited for the correct moment. And I think that Nilo became the correct moment. Now, for the Cuban vote, Billy, you saw the Cuban vote.
Great show.
Could you think of a reason why students can't see that show?
I can. It's a romantic comedy. And I think we should ban romantic comedies. They create unrealistic expectations for young people about love. And I think that they're traumatizing.
It's a romantic comedy based on a work of Shakespeare, and they gave no reason why they were banning it. Now, with all the journalists,
Shakespeare was not an American.
You know, the journalists ask, and they said, "Oh, it's because of use of language."
Oh, but Shakespeare also was a cross-dresser, didn't he? He looked like he was wearing like women's clothing. It's a drag Shakespeare. Okay. Hang on. I did not have a question for Michelle. I had a compliment for Michelle, which is that I don't know that there is a theater company. Certainly not in Miami, not in the state of Florida, possibly not in the country, who does better work at representation, at commissioning works and staging, in this case, a classic work for its 20th anniversary that has a more diverse group of playwrights, a more diverse group of actors. I mean, when we did Confessions of a Cocaine Cowboy together. You had Jews, you had Dominicans, you had Colombians, you had Cubans, you had straight, you had gay. I mean, it was just an incredible, extraordinary group of people doing this play. And that is true of all of the work at Miami New Drama. And I would encourage everyone to support Miami New Drama, support local theater. You could subscribe or you can just buy one ticket. Come and see one show. But it's an extraordinary experience. And I would encourage everyone to come and see the 20th anniversary production of Nilo Cruz's Anna at the Tropics. Michelle, at Colony Theater.
Michelle, if people want to donate more quietly and privately than the real look at me Corbin over here, how can they do so if they want to help you with the things that you're doing?
Thank you so much. They can go to miaminewdrama.org, and there's a donate button there. It explains also everything we do in education. It talks about our season, our vision, our mission, and we would really appreciate any support at this moment. It's been a rough year because of COVID. Theaters across the country have been hit hard. So if there's ever a time to support not only Miami New Drama, but the other great organizations of Miami-Dade County, should be now.
And I apologize, Michelle. I didn't realize this was the sports talk radio show where we do things quietly. My bad. We could talk offline.
Thank you, Michelle. All charity is usually done better without bringing attention to yourself. Thank you, Michelle.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
We'll get to Brian Norcross in a second. Many of you in South Florida know that name. It doesn't need much of an introduction. But before we do that, Billy, I just wanted to talk to you about a couple of a firing and a hiring of Ortizes. One at the Miami Police Department, another at Florida International University. Miami, per square foot, has a lot of Ortizes. Tell us about what's happening with these two.
Well, we talked about Javier Ortiz before. He is the most controversial cop in town, the most corrupt cop in the city of Miami, which incidentally is quite an achievement. You have to give him that. He is a police captain who has been terrorizing this community for 18 years. He's got, I think, 60 misconduct complaints from the community. He's got complaints from police officers, his colleagues. He's had 12 lawsuits costing taxpayers. We don't even know how much, because between the settlements for hundreds of thousands of dollars and the attorney's fees that city taxpayers have had to pay, it could be into the millions for all we know. He has finally been fired, not for any reason that we've previously covered on this show. So not for his pattern of abuse and bias against minorities, particularly African-Americans. That's a direct quote from an FBI report on him. Not his excessive force, not his false arrests, not his cyber stalking, which has caused him to be put on a $137,000 a year vacation. Paid suspension is what they call it. But this is also a guy, he's got 60 complaints. That's like a record-breaking number. For most of his career, he's been a supervisor, which means that he doesn't have to interact with the public. He just likes it. He likes to beat up on people. He's a bully. He likes to beat people up. He likes to push people around, and he brags about how many complaints he had because they've all been brushed under the rug. He's never been held responsible. Internal affairs has covered it up. He, by the way, used to be the union president, the Miami Fraternal Order of Police president. He's written the contract. So he knows, he walks between the raindrops. The IA will bury a complaint for just the number of days that they have to make it.
It's like
a statute of limitations.
But why is internal affairs protecting a rogue and corrupt cop?
Because Miami. Because he was the president of their union. He basically runs the show. He was the highest profile, probably one of the most famous police officers. Nobody knew who the chiefs were. We've had like five chiefs in 5 years, you know, in the Miami Police Department. But people knew him. He was a constant. And he was committing crimes. He and his bike squad in 2013, when the Heat won their second straight championship, fans were celebrating in downtown Miami. They were going around and beating the shit out of people on the street, just for filming on the street or celebrating on the street. This guy has committed perjury. This guy has lied in official documents. This guy was banned from Ultra for beating a tourist because his girlfriend was trying to bring a glow stick into Bayfront Park. They beat the shit out of the guy on camera, lied under oath, and Catherine Fernandez Rundle, the state attorney, has failed to stop this criminal. This guy has broken law after law. It has been documented by the FBI, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the ACLU. Nobody has done anything about it.
But now fired.
He has now been terminated. And I'll bet you, I don't know, can we do this on DraftKings? I want to bet that in less than 2 years, he will have appealed, gone through arbitration, will have been rehired with full back pay. If you come for the king, you better not miss. This is the guy that wrote the contract. He's been terminated now, not for any of the litany of crazy shit and crimes that he has committed, but for like petty anti shit. And I don't think they have him. And I think what's going to happen is he gets his job back and he comes back and then he's untouchable because they will have come for the king and missed.
Why did they come for the king on flimsy stuff?
Oh, you want to know why? Because he had a falling out with Joe Carollo. And Joe Carollo runs the town. Joe Carollo told Manny Morales, you remember, this is the new police chief. This guy's a veteran Miami, city of Miami police officer who, remember, they fired Art Noriega because Art Noriega called the commissioners in Miami out for corruption, called them the Miami Mafia. Well, he didn't say Miami Mafia. You know, he said something else. They said Art Acevedo, who was born in Cuba, was not a real Cuban. They said, we need to fire him because he's calling us corrupt. He was right, by the way. And then they hired Manny Morales. And you'll remember, they played the Godfather theme. Joe Carollo on his phone played the Godfather theme as they were swearing in Manny Morales. Joe Carollo, he tells code enforcement to go shut down somebody's private business. They go shut down somebody's private business. He tells the police chief to fire this cop he doesn't like. He fires this cop he doesn't like. The problem is they've had ample opportunities to not only fire Javier Ortiz, but prosecute him, arrest him for crimes. And instead, they waited for some, this is like, oh, he didn't get the right person to sign off on his overtime. By the way, all the city of Miami police officers, most of them anyway, have been abusing this overtime system. Some of them are punched in as cops on taxpayer dime, and they're also punched in doing off-duty work in Wynwood outside a nightclub. So they're double dipping, they're going overtime where they're doing off-duty work, they're awake, and then when they're on city time, they're asleep in their cruisers. There's been rampant abuse of this, but they're not prosecuting anybody for that. They didn't fire anybody for that. This bullshit thing, he had the wrong person sign off on his overtime. That's what I think. I just think they've blown it.
Before we get to Brian Norcross, how about the hiring at Florida International University of Yacine Ortiz?
Okay, I just have to read the headline because it's like a Miami Mad Lib. It's a wild ride. Buckle up. I'm going to take a deep breath. Ex-City of Miami cop Yacine Ortiz, who was sued for beating and falsely arresting a Gulf War vet, costing taxpayers $79,000 to settle the suit, and resigned in disgrace amidst an FBI probe into an illegal pirate towing scheme scandal, just got hired by Florida International University Police, whose chief Alexander Casas is married to Ortiz's ex-wife, who is herself a Miami-Dade police officer.
Yes. That's it. We don't need any information other than the headline.
No, I mean, it's just crazy. And needless to say, the comments underneath that, it'll be the subject of my new documentary, Cuckold Cowboys.
Can't wait for your new documentary. We don't talk about it enough around here, but Hulu will have, is it going to be called Pool Boy or is it going to be called something else?
It's about the Pool Boy, but it is called, God forbid, The Scandal That Brought Down a Dynasty.
Looking forward to that about Jerry Falwell Jr. We will talk more about that in coming weeks because it's coming out soon. But let's get to what is, I can say this legitimately, a South Florida weather legend. No, it's not saying much.
It is saying much.
Well, a South Florida weather legend. Like, I could have just said legend. A weather legend. A wedgend. Yeah. Brian Norcross next.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
This man's face and voice soothe me. and they have soothed me for a long time in the face of natural terrors. He hears this all the time, I am sure. Brian Norcross guided South Florida and Homestead through Hurricane Andrew. He is South Florida's most famous meteorologist ever, correct? No one else. Does anyone else go in that conversation near Mr. Norcross?
Yeah, not Don, no. Not Bob anybody. Sober.
Congratulations. We are thrilled to have you, Brian. Thank you for making an appearance here. I know a lot of people associate you with Andrew, but we are soothed by your presence. I think I speak for all of us. Do I speak for Billy Corbin, who is rarely soothed?
Every time I'm in a fetal position in the bathtub, I think about Brian Norcross.
I'm sure that's true.
You're associated with that one storm down here, right? Because people needed their hands held and you held their hands for them.
It was an unusual confluence of events, for sure. You know, we had done tremendous amount of preparation, more, I think, than any TV station ever before. I'd spent 2.5 years asking every question I could ask of emergency managers and Hurricane Center, public officials, and so forth. You know, what would happen if we had a big hurricane here? Hadn't had anything really in the 27 years before Andrew came. And so I was kind of ready. And then, you know, we were the last man standing in terms of being able to communicate with people over the radio and on television through the heart of that storm.
I am a special kind of terrified because of King Tide, because of climate change, because South Florida seems to be in peril more than most on natural disaster hurricane front. So can you explain to me, Brian, why it is that we go 27 years, as you say, without a storm, and how random some of this stuff is? Because it seems this year so far, it's early, obviously, but I was expecting and fearing calamities, and nothing has come close to threatening us.
Interesting thing, and this is relatively new research, I mean, over the last 5 or 8 years or something like that, I think I first was aware of it, that we used to think that hurricanes came in cycles, that forever and ever, there would be more of them for 25 to 40 years, and then fewer and more and fewer. Now we know that in the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of air pollution. If you remember, if you went to New York or someplace, the skies were just dark with soot all the time. You'd sweat in the summer and you'd wipe your forehead and your hand would be black. And LA was, you know, dense and smog and whatnot in the 70s. And then the Clean Air Act came along here, and in Europe, comparable laws came into effect, and we kind of cleaned up the skies. Well, that pollution from Europe went over the Atlantic and was part of the cooling of the Atlantic, along with some extra Saharan dust, and that just tamped down the hurricane. So through the 70s and 80s and into the early 90s, we just had fewer storms, and so that was large measure responsible for the fact that we didn't have many here. Then there's this random thing that where do they go? Not like there weren't any hurricanes, they just didn't come here during that time. So that's all corrected now. You know, if you think of it as corrected, the skies are clearer, the sun hits the tropical oceans, the oceans get warmer, so now we're just more likely to have a storm. This year has been weird. The macro conditions we look at in the Pacific, whether it's El Nino or La Nina, El Ninos tend to suppress hurricanes, La Ninas tend to enhance the possibility of a hurricane, and we have a La Nina. So we would normally have more hurricanes. Also, the tropical Atlantic is very warm. And so those two things generally lead to more storms forming. That's why you saw all the forecasts in the spring saying it's going to be an extra busy hurricane season. And it hasn't worked out that way yet, but we're right at the midpoint. So on average, 50% of the hurricanes happen after this date in the middle of September to the end of October, sometimes lapping over into November. 50% of them. So we have got plenty of time to go, and there are some systems.
Please stop
out.
It.
How just, encouraging.
Just please plenty stop of, it. No, just
hold my beer. Yeah, that was the.
Yes, yes. We surprised you in the first half, but wait until you see the second half.
Exactly, yeah.
So Brian Norcross is now the Fox Weather Hurricane Specialist. He has a Fox Weather special called The Wrath of Hurricane Andrew, Tragedy and Triumph. 30 years later. Brian, I have a couple of Hurricane Andrew questions for you. The first of which is, you had mentioned Los Angeles and the smog. I often have arguments with my friends out west, where they say earthquakes are far worse and more traumatic than hurricanes. I don't know why we have to have this competition, but it's a thing. And they say, because at least with hurricanes, you guys get warnings. And I remember 30 years ago, I mean, obviously the technology is several generations ago, but I remember that we at first believed that Hurricane Andrew was headed towards a different part of the county. And I lived in Northeast Miami-Dade, my family did at the time. And there was this idea that maybe we would be safer if we went to the southwest of the county. I remember that early. Can you kind of recount that early confusion, you know, what actually turned out happening, and then how the technology has improved today in terms of making these predictions, which I'm in my lifetime, I think we've seen them far more accurate since Hurricane Andrew.
Shorten up your questions, Billy.
Sorry. So you're right. They're totally more accurate now. I mean, drastically more accurate. But if Hurricane Andrew were to happen again, it would still be a confounding difficult storm, because 4 days before it made landfall as a Category 5, there was no closed circulation. It wasn't even technically a tropical storm. 3 days before it first became a tropical storm, 2 days before it first became a hurricane, 75-mile-an-hour hurricane. When you have something that it comes together that quickly, that close to the coast, it's really difficult to react well and get everybody in place and get everything done. But in 1992, the world was simpler. And so we really kind of felt like we had enough time. But to your point about the forecast of where the storm is going, you know, it was never forecast to go to the Dade-Broward line by the National Hurricane Center. But yet almost everybody, I think, thinks that that was the forecast. Somewhere they got that idea and they kind of reacted to that.
So is that like an apocryphal thing then that I remember?
No, I think you remember it actually happening, because too many people remember it, you know, for it to not have happened. But the forecast didn't come from me. I mean, who knows? Somewhere it got distributed, somewhere somebody got that idea. If you looked at the details of the forecast, it jumped from Central Florida to just north of West Palm, to Boca, to South Dade. It kind of made that progression all in one day down the coast, because hurricane forecasts back then were just bad. I mean, we didn't really have a sense that, you know, we could forecast where they were going to go accurately. And people back then really went more with the hurricane warnings and watches. And when they finally put up a warning, they put up a warning on Sunday morning. It hit that night, of course. The warning went all the way from Vero Beach to Key West. So, you know, that was an indication really of the level of technology and how focused we could be on exactly where the worst of the storm was going to be.
So, Brian, when I think about Hurricane Andrew, I actually think about you squished next to Kelly Craig, squished next to Tony Segretto, like with flashlights in the WTVJ studio. Can you recount, did you guys not have power, or were you running off a generator? Like, what was happening there in that studio?
Yeah, we were running off a generator, but what was happening is, you know, we were reasonably safe, but at, oh, I don't know, about 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm looking up at the ceiling of the studio, and you can feel the building starting to move a little bit. It's a big concrete building, middle of downtown Miami, and I knew at that time we were on the fringe, but I didn't know how much of the fringe. You know, I didn't know how bad it was going to be. And what I was really afraid of is some air conditioner blowing off a high-rise building across the street and coming and smashing through the roof over top of us. And I thought, this isn't too good. Why don't we look for a safe place to go? Because I've been telling everybody, get your safe place ready. Get your interior hallway, your closet, your interior bathroom ready, because that's where you're going to go when this gets bad. And as soon as I had that thought, I thought, wait a minute, this is great, because if I'm telling other folks to do it, we should do it too. So right on TV, we talked to the floor directors, the production manager was there, and said, arrange a safe place for us, would you? And there would happen to be a storage closet right off the studio. So at 3:30 in the morning, you know, with kind of great ceremony, we got up and walked into that storage area that they set up so we could continue broadcasting. But that decision wasn't made until a half an hour before we did it. So it wasn't a pre-planned thing. Yeah, we were on generator. And so in that storage area, we had kind of rudimentary lighting, but they had set us up with microphones and a monitor. And, you know, we sat there on the concrete and we were kind of protected, but mostly it looked like we were protected. Wow. Did you hear that?
What's the forecast,
what
Brian?
What just happened? We heard
that was thunder.
We heard, yes, storming here, storming there as well. A lot of storming.
Yes, I'm looking out the window in your direction, and I'm not even seeing Ocean Drive and the hotels.
This is what
so
the technology
going on in between us, I think.
This is what the technology has come to. Brian just looks out the window and tells us what the weather is.
The wrath of Hurricane Andrew, tragedy and triumph 30 years. What did you learn in the making of it? Why did you decide to make it?
Well, so first of all, I learned a lot because I went back and talked to people that I hadn't talked to for 30 years and was in neighborhoods in Homestead 30 years later and at the Deering Estate. And, you know, we relived a lot of the things that we went through in those weeks after Andrew when I met a lot of those folks.
King Tide, how worried should Miami be about one of these storms hitting when the water is high tide?
Yeah, well, it adds a foot or two to the storm surge is the thing. And, you know, the biggest threat we have here, yes, we have a climate threat. The water where I am in Miami Beach, they raised the street here because the water was coming up out of the sewers and flooding the street. For years, that was going on. It was just getting worse and worse. And this street here was the first street to be raised to push back against climate. And now it works perfectly. You put in these fancy pumps and everything is good. But many parts of South Florida still flood at king tides and would flood in any sort of even low-level hurricane. But the biggest threat that we have here in the short term is a hurricane. It has always been a hurricane. Yeah, the water will be higher. The storm surge will be higher. There's the issue of the heavier rainfall because there's more water in the atmosphere and strong storms probably be a little bit stronger. Just having a significant hurricane here like has happened in the past. 1926, the water came all the way across Miami Beach and flooded Miami from water coming across Miami Beach. So, you know, we live in the hurricane zone here and hurricanes continue to be a threat every year. In the long term, you know, obviously climate is a threat to all of us.
How have we gotten lucky? I mean, because for us to have only been hit by one Hurricane Andrew like that in the last 50 years is a bit of an upset, isn't it?
No, the hurricanes go all kinds of places. I mean, there's been lots of bad hurricanes in the last 50 years. Two Category 5s hit up in the Gulf. You have to go back to 1935 for another Category 5 to hit, and that one was in the Keys, and that was even worse than Andrew, if you can imagine. So, you know, these things don't happen very often, but a lot of hurricanes happen in South Florida, and occasionally one of them will be off the charts. Like Andrew, you know, in the first seven decades of the 20th century, so from the aughts to the 60s, seven times a hurricane came over downtown Miami. And that didn't count storms like Andrew. There was one in 45 that wasn't quite as strong as Andrew, but it hit down there. That didn't count that because that came over Homestead, not downtown Miami. So it's a hurricane prone place, but still, even saying that, they don't have them very often.
Brian, we are home to some of the most valuable and vulnerable waterfront real estate in the world. Dan's asking about Cat 5s, but I mean, how worried should we be about a direct hit from a Cat 3 even? I mean, like how devastating would even a, not that a Cat 3 is a minor storm, but how devastating would a direct hit by even a minor hurricane be to South Florida?
Well, it would be extremely disruptive and extremely damaging in some places. I mean, think back to Irma, right? How just disruptive Irma was in Southeast Florida, forgetting Southwest Florida where it actually hit. But in Southeast Florida, right, a lot of people had no cell phones and no internet, and there was no power for a good long while, for a week or two in a lot of parts of metropolitan Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And that wasn't even a hurricane. That was just tropical storm force winds, but they were persistent. So it has to do with how strong the winds are. It has to do with how persistent they are. It has to do with how much rain comes with it. The more rain comes, the more trees fall down when the wind blows. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily all revolve around how strong it is. But to answer your direct question, a Category 3 hurricane, you know, would be in the top 10, if not top 5 hurricanes of all time in cost if it hit metropolitan Miami.
I have seen some of the testing done for hurricanes that sound or seem like they would be even beyond Category 5, that climate change is such that perhaps we'd get something, even though there's not a classification, I don't think, beyond Category 5. Would you say, Brian, that we're headed toward seeing hurricanes that are even larger than Andrew?
Well, yeah. So we had one not long ago and not far away in 2019. Hurricane Dorian was a Category 5 hurricane. The winds, you know, we have a little different measuring technique now, so we can be more accurate now, like in 2019, were measured at 185 miles an hour, where the estimate for Andrews Peak was 165 miles per hour. And Dorian was a bigger storm, and it just mauled the northern Bahamas, Abacos and Grand Bahama Island. I was in Abaco recently, by the way, just a couple weeks ago, and they're coming back to life. They're fighting a war over there, fighting against what happened to them, but they're putting the pieces back together. The plane was full of tourists, so that was great to see. But it can happen. It wasn't that far away. A monster Category 5 that just sat for days.
Look at me, Louie. Oh, he gets to look at me, Louie, for I was in Abaco a couple of weeks ago. A real name drop from Brian Norcross. The wrath of Hurricane Andrew, tragedy and triumph, 30 years. Thank you for your soothing face, your soothing voice, your soothing work. Always good talking to you, Brian.
You guys be well. Take care.
Thanks to Billy Corbin. We've got a load management week for Billy Corbin next week, but he'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you, Billy.
Cocaines.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.